Well, thanks for coming in, Nitin.
Thank you.
And I'm going to begin fairly bluntly by asking you the question, when you think of the term world music, what does it conjure up in your imagination?
Oh, dear.
I thought you might say that.
It's more than a double-edged sword, actually. It's got lots of edges to it. I mean, I don't really... I suppose on one side, I feel that the term world music is a bizarre one, because I once said, well, if world music was a fair term or a meaningful term, why isn't all music world music? It's for me, in one way, has always been a kind of excuse to marginalise music from other cultures based on some kind of bizarre form of prejudice. I mean, it's almost like apartheid in record shops.
Do you ever think it was based on good intentions, actually?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, you know, in terms of the intentions behind it, that's another story altogether. And I know that, you know, of course, there are, you know, WOMAD is a great festival and has had some amazing musicians and has helped a lot of musicians to establish an accessibility to the West. And you know, obviously... Real World was very helpful with people like Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan, who's one of my great heroes, and you know, there are countless examples of the term world music. I mean, World Circuit was the first label that I put. Nick Gold's World Circuit was the first label that I put. Spirit Dance, which is the first album I ever did, I put that through him. So yeah, I mean, you know, that's what I mean. It certainly has had good intentions and has had a lot of good people involved. It's just the problem I have is the way in which the term itself is kind of misused.
It's become, yeah, a marketing term. But what is it about this kind of music that gets bracketed under this one word that is deemed to be too, whatever the word would be, too alien, too other, too exotic, too strange, too unusual for so-called Western ears to listen to?
See, I mean, I think the problem is it's kind of how we're educated to think. You know, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because I mean, if you start talking about this, you can't avoid political territory. You know, but I would just say, you know, that we should be open to all forms of music. And you know, if we lived in a country which hadn't got such a parochial kind of fearful attitude of other cultures, we'd probably be listening a lot more to different forms of music. But I do think, you know, that on the radio generally, there isn't an equal platform for listening to music which, you know, which is just as enjoyable, if not more so, than the music that we're given access to on a daily basis through mainstream radio.
Do you think it's a sort of side product of the success, if you like, of what is ultimately sort of Anglo-American popular music? And even though that was based originally on a kind of hybrid and indeed involved absorbing exotic influences, it's actually ended up developing a style that rejects the rest of the world, if you like. Unless it's almost colonial in a way, unless it treats it in a way that they can just make it part of the music without truly getting deep into the cultures that they borrow from. So do you think it's a byproduct of that success?
There's a lot of generalizations in all of that. I mean, I think yes, possibly, but at the same time, it's really difficult because, I mean, for example, you know, in terms of what you're saying with that kind of that attitude, one of the greatest contradictions is, for instance, the soundtrack to Dead Man Walking, where you hear Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan's voice used with Eddie Vedder's beautifully to incredible effect and very emotionally in the context of the Deep South of America. And, you know, here we have a massive contradiction, which is, you know, so paradoxical to listen to, but it has it has every single emotion that you can imagine when you're listening to it, because it transcends, his voice transcended all boundaries. And I think, you know, that's when it's quite interesting, because we, you know, that kind of colonial attitude, or perhaps even that kind of prejudice, can be subverted to great effect. So it's a difficult thing to really comment in any kind of clear way on what you're saying.
But it does come down to language in a way, and perspective, doesn't it? And certainly the way that music has got written about. I notice that when people review your music, you know, it's very interesting in a way because they fall into all sorts of traps, which I've noticed that you actually do. You're one of those people that do respond. You know, I've seen you pop up on, you know, chat boards or whatever to correct or or debate.
Oh, you've seen that, have you?
I have seen that, which is interesting that you bothered to do it. But I think it's what is fascinating is that they all fall into, even if sometimes they are being positive and complimentary, they kind of fall into traps, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, yes, I'd say that's true. I mean, to be honest with you, I'd rather a critic kind of attack me and rip me to shreds, but actually did so on the basis of listening to the music and talking about the music rather than their their prejudice about what they're listening to and who I am, and their preconception of what that might entail. So it's kind of it is difficult because I do get frustrated by that, as I've many times talked about before, that whole situation with the Mercury Prize. Actually, just today I was mentioned in the Scotsman as a former token jazz musician, jazz nominee for the Mercury Prize. But actually, you know, so I've been a token lots of things actually. But I'm always talking about the story of when I went into a record shop, a very well known one, during the time shortly after the Mercury nominations had been announced, and saw that 11 of the 12 Mercury Prize nominations were in one shelf, and mine was the only one that wasn't. And when I asked why that was the case, I didn't say who I was. They immediately responded by saying, that's where Nitin Sawhney sells. He sells out of world music, and that's where he goes. And I said, well, you've got a classical music album, you've got a folk music album, why the world music section? He said, well, that's it. World music is over there. And it was just that kind of inability to let go of this kind of, you know, this dogmatic kind of entrenched position about, you know, what world music is. And it's got to be about marginalization. And if it isn't, then, you know, that's a problem. And it's, I think that summed up a lot for me.
And with some of the cynicism about what became known as this music, often because the music from that became successful tended by its very nature to be a kind of soft hybrid and easy. Well, I mean, you've been accused of this because of that, probably easy listening. You know?
It's quite nice listening to how you're trying to avoid saying something. But thank you for doing that. I guess I have been called. I've been called lots of things, as I was saying. I mean, chill out and easy listening, and then, you know, it's quite funny because I was called more extreme than the Sex Pistols at one point because we did a gig at the V&A that they thought was quite a mad thing for me to do years ago. But none of that is an issue for me. I think it's really about, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, like you we were just talking about your book about the North and just saying that the North is a construct in a similar way. I think the whole notion of world music is such a kind of ridiculous construct in lots of ways because it's just literally an excuse to box in a lot of great music, and music should just be without boundaries, and I've always felt that. And you know, when you play music, it should come from the heart and not from some kind of, you know, idea of what category you're trying to fit into.
It is interesting you mentioned the Mercury Prize because I was going to bring that up. That there's one place where allegedly there's a chance for publicity to be given to music that apparently doesn't usually get it, although that's less and less the case. But I just wondered, when you were nominated, how that felt. Did it feel an example of the boxing in and the tokenism, or did you feel that it was a moment when things were beginning to change?
I mean, it was interesting because I'd obviously seen what had been going on with the Mercurys for a few years. I mean, you know, you'd had the previous year to when I was nominated, Talvin Singh had won, and Black Star Liner had also been nominated, and you'd had Asian Dub Foundation and so on nominated as Asian artists, and later on there was people like Shashila Rahman. But I kind of think that it's a difficult one because I won't tell you who it was, but someone in a very knowledgeable position at the time actually did mention to me that one of the reasons why Obviously, I was grateful to be nominated, but I was stunned by somebody who would actually know the situation. Turned around and said to me, "Well, one of the reasons given why you didn't actually win, was that Talvin Singh had won the previous year." And I just said, "That is disgusting.
It's and unbelievable.
Just absolutely shocking." But I mean, you know, I said I wasn't bothered at all. Yeah. I am now. Now you just told me that. But you know, I mean, it's. I mean, you know, I think the Mercury, you know, given that there's 12 albums that are selected, you know, you can't really have a token anything when you have that few albums that are selected. So, I mean, you know, they do try to select across the board in a wide way. I mean, I'm a judge in the Ivor Novello Awards and a few other kind of things, like, you know, the Biffers and stuff like that. And I know that it is difficult when you're actually trying to figure out how to pick someone for a particular award, and you have to take in lots and lots of factors. So yeah, I mean, I don't have any kind of resentment about that or anything.
It's interesting. I just want to go back to that easy listening thing, because one of the responses I saw you make to one review that had brought that up was deeply indignant, correctly so, I believe, because you pointed out that some of those sounds and some of those noises and some of the ways of putting together that music are rooted in thousands of years of tradition. And it's only recently we've got these weird notions that somehow if you're beautiful and sublime, that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, you can't be angry.
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing. I mean, you know, one, I think the particular review you're referring to had actually been talking about the bansuri, which is an Indian classical instrument. I mean, it's the flute, but played in an Indian classical style. And you know, this is the problem, is that, well, I mean, you know, that particular, I think that was an isolated situation, because I mean, that what I'd done was at the Royal Opera House, and I remember quite a few people said, "Oh, this is the sort of world music you find in travelers' guide CDs and all that kind of thing." I thought, that's hilarious, because they are listening with their eyes. The people on stage, there was a Japanese woman, there was an Indian woman, there was somebody singing Spanish and so on, but the actual scale I was using for the vast majority of that piece was modal. I mean, it was an altered scale. You don't get that in just about. I mean, you don't even have that in rags. You don't have that in any other form of Asian music. It's actually a very much a Western classical or even jazz scale. So it was interesting that they thought that. And in fact, the techniques I'd use were purely mathematical, and the same kind of techniques that you might find people like Steve Reich using or other people. But I think because they were listening to it with thinking about the accents and the people who were singing it, they kind of thought immediately, oh, this is world music, and dismissed it as such, which is even more shocking because it was like that in some way was a reason why it wasn't good. And I found that, you know, again, I mean, if you have issues with that particular piece of music or that particular performance of it, then fair enough. But I think if you criticize it on the basis of saying, well, this is just world music and so on, you dismiss it like that, I think it's a bit crass and a bit simplistic and very obvious and quite badly researched and thought through.
What I've always noticed with musicians when they make music, whatever it is, even if it's from an obvious genre, you know, punk or trip-hop or whatever, they never go into the making of the piece of music thinking, I am going to make a...
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the great dichotomies between how music is written about and indeed marketed and indeed how musicians make it.
Unless, you know, I mean, quite often you'll find people who are on, you know, their second or third album or whatever, or having pressure from a particular record company. You know, they may find themselves having to fit into a category. I mean, you know, this happened to me several times. And I mean, earlier on, I was in the very early days of when I was playing, I played with the James Taylor Quartet, and that whole acid jazz movement kicked off. And suddenly, you know, it was all about acid jazz and everything was to do with that. And I watched James trying very delicately to get away from that whole movement, because he knew it was going to die quite soon. And of course it did, and you know, he didn't want to go down with it naturally. And it's it was a similar thing with me when I watched the whole Asian Underground thing happen. Even when I took part in Goodness Gracious Me, I knew a similar thing was going to happen. You know, it's kind of, so things become fashionable, and that's why I always said you can't reduce cultural change to a fad or a fashion, because the second you start doing that, you're actually really endangering. I mean, yeah, this is why a lot of Asian artists got dropped, really, because they got signed very quickly. You know, the Black Star Liners, the Bad Martian Shrees, the, you know, Fundamental, all these kind of bands, Asian Dub Foundation, were very popular and the flavor of that, you know, particular year. But then suddenly, you know, there wasn't any place for them on the radio. Mm. Radio didn't know what to do with them. And of course, you know, because of the ridiculously low level of Asian artists who get played on Radio 1 or Radio 2, which is obscene, actually. Because of that, you know, there was no opportunity for those artists to actually have any kind of solid foothold in the music industry or in the market anyway.
It is interesting because I noticed when someone like you makes some music and you'll be putting it together in the way that your instincts are, you know, encouraging you to put it together, and then there's an immediate sense as soon as it's released, what is it? And there's an attempt to try and almost read your mind about what your intentions were, and then something is put on top of it, and usually that means, you know, the words are bad, usually they're fusion, they're world.
Yeah.
And they implicate you in some kind of, you know, conspiracy.
Of course.
When in fact what you're doing in fact is a kind of experimentation to resist being bracketed.
Yeah, totally. Well, thanks for saying that, because that's totally right. I mean, it was interesting yesterday because I'm doing this show at the moment with Akram Khan and John Hurt, who's one of my heroes, came to the performance, and I was talking to him afterwards, he was actually saying that what he really enjoyed about the show was he didn't know how to categorize it. It wasn't theatre, it wasn't a review, it wasn't anything in particular, but he just knew that he enjoyed the show. And that's really, you know, if I go and see a film, for example, I mean, film doesn't suffer from this same kind of stigma, you know, of people desperately trying to categorize what it is. I suppose that does happen, but, you know, in terms of adventure or thriller or whatever, you know, but it's not as bad because a director can feel more at liberty to actually draw from a range of different influences, and then that categorization happens later on down the line. But people don't begrudge a film for being diverse in nature. In fact, you know, films like Babel or Crash or what was it called? The I can't even remember the name of it now. The one with Tom Cruise and all those guys. Magnolia.
Oh, right.
Yeah. You know, films like that have kind of this way of pulling in lots of different ideas and stories and concepts and drawing them together in a converged way of looking at things. I think, you know, they're praised for doing that.
I think it is interesting. It's a kind of weird battle at the moment when choice has never been so kind of paramount, and yet on the other hand classification also, and it seems to be the paradox, and it seems to be those things of which you were suggesting that you can't immediately say what it is, piecing together all the possibilities that there are that are the suggestion of where things might be going. And originally all the things that people love now and have become popular were all originally unclassifiable by their very nature. And it seems to be almost like they're choking themselves by wanting to instantly put it in a box, when in fact if they allowed it to flourish, the new thing that they're so desperately looking for might start to materialise.
Yeah, but I mean, the problem is about neat packaging, isn't it, really? I mean, you know, this is the thirst for, you know, everything to be neatly categorised, and so that you know where you are and you feel safe and familiar, you feel like, you know, your world is not threatened by the other or something, that actually, you know, feels like it's undermining your sense of identity, you know. And I think that's the problem. You know, a lot of people are, you know, want to retread familiar ground all the time. You know, it's interesting for me. I mean, I went to see XX the other day, and I think you know, I mean, I absolutely loved listening to them. I mean, they've obviously they've just been nominated as well for the Mercury, and I love what they're doing on CD. I thought it was fantastic, but I was watching them, I was thinking The Cure, I was thinking it's quite weird. I mean, I saw The Cure, you know, sort of like many years ago, and I was thinking, God, how strange, it's just really odd. Or, you know, even kind of Ian Curtis type movements or whatever, you know, kind of there were certain, or in terms of how the, you know, the one of them was dressed, and I was just kind of thinking it was just a strange thing. I'm not saying it was good or bad, it was just an odd moment. Well, and or even Bloc Party listening to Stiff Little Fingers drummer, you know, you kind of hear these things just kind of coming back, and it's like, you know, that's innovation. Sure, there is, you know, there's always something different, and you know, no disrespect to those bands, but it's just, I kind of think, you know, there's almost a, we almost just go in cycles, and that was that was even the case when I was young. You know, there was a craze about 60s music. And, sure. You know.
It's, I guess what's happened recently is that a lot of modern pop groups, they're essentially curating their record collection and their influences into new shapes.
Yeah.
And occasionally that can be novel, or occasionally it can be something that, you know, like XX, who were deemed to be utterly original. 99 things immediately occur to you. It's quite fascinating.
Yeah.
And again, like you say, it's neither good nor bad. But I was just interested in that terms of pop curating itself and dreaming of its own past at the moment. As part of that has been an increasing interest in what we think of as world music, at least music from other countries, because that becomes a way that they can find new sounds and new sources for rhythms. And I just wondered what you think of that, because, you know, you see, you know, Radio Clip will cover Florence of the Machine and it'll be remixed by XX, and it's got an African sort of air because of the way that they've discovered their rhythms. But sometimes for me, if I may be a critic for a moment, it's got a slight sense of sort of A-levels in multiculturalism, and in that sense seems quite cold and bland. Or is it a good thing?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because, I mean, you know, again, we, like we were saying, we go in cycles, and, you know, world music was kind of quite popular and cool for a while in the 90s, and, you know, but and like I said, people like Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan really helped to keep it that way. But then now you've got Africa Express, of course, through Damon Albarn, and which I've actually participated in, and is a great thing to have done, and I really like the ideas about it, and to get a chance to actually jam on stage with Veuve Far Couturier is a great thing, so I can't knock it. But at the same time, it's kind of you know, the problem is that association with what's cool and what's trendy and what's in style and fashion, the danger of that being associated with an understanding of the world around you is, you know, is quite concerning, I suppose, because I kind of think that we should do that regardless of whether it is fashionable, you know, or not. And I think, you know, in terms of different types of rhythm and so on, when I hear a track in 11/8 or 7/4 on the radio that becomes a number one success, you know, then I'll be impressed, you know, by people actually being open to other types of rhythm. But I mean, you know, I think as far as we've gone is probably drum and bass, which had a kind of, you know, I suppose at times was quite polyrhythmic in some ways, but generally came from a 4/4 pattern. So it's we haven't really got to that place yet, I don't think. I mean, dubstep's quite interesting because there's a lot of space in dubstep, and people explore it in different ways and try and play around with rhythms and also samples from other cultures and different types of music as well. So that's quite cool when people do that, but it's still nowhere near the point where people really are truly adventurous with rhythm, you know.
And I guess the dream really is the idea that once we can appreciate and experience music from other countries in just as part of our experience of listening to music is where really we're starting to understand other countries, and we're not going to be so prejudiced about them, etc., etc. That's why it seems to be so important, and why it's so depressing that there is this ridiculous symbolic block of world music.
Yeah. I mean, when I've DJed in Fabric, I mean, I remember actually putting on just to see how it would go down. I put on a track from Ojos de Brujo, which is a Spanish flamenco hip hop band, and they, you know, they play this particular track is a bulería. It's a 12/8 pattern. So it's in 12 beat cycles, and people were just completely confused by it, so I just took it off pretty quickly. but yeah, I mean, it's interesting. As soon as you do take people out of that safe territory, it can be difficult, but, you know, it's about gradually coaxing people into listening to different forms and different types of rhythm. And it, you know, one of the problems is, I mean, if you're a physicist or a mathematician or something like that, you know, the better you get at your subject, I mean, if you get a PhD in it or whatever, you know, then you're not going to have some guy who's got a GCSE come along and say, well, you know, I don't like your theory on whatever, you know, Schrodinger or Heisenberg or whatever. But if you're a musician and you've actually got to a certain level where you are able to experiment with lots of different kind of time signatures and play around with music from lots of different cultures, then if you put a record out like that, it's going to get, you know, as anybody can talk about it, and a lot of people can talk about it from a position of not having a clue what you're doing, but will be able to say, well, I don't like this music because it just sounds to me like blah, blah, blah. And that might be just because they don't know about it, which is fair enough. But I mean, this is one of the problems for that I find with a lot of musicians. I mean, we talk about this sometimes, you know, people I know who have got to a phenomenal standard on their instrument, or have an incredibly deep knowledge of composition, or you know, have got a great knowledge of different forms of music from all over the place, all over the world, and traveled a lot and taken in music from Aboriginal cultures to you know, African musicians to Indian musicians. You know, if you've done that, how on earth do you repackage that so it's accessible enough to get you a Brit Award? I mean, it's not going to happen, is it?
I suppose it's a weird dislocation that music increasingly, certainly in the commercial westernized world, has become more fashion, hasn't it? It's about fashion.
Yeah.
It's almost not, it's a soundtrack to the fashion, and the fashion is more important, and the soundtrack almost is the accessory.
Mm.
Whereas the turning it on its head completely is that love of music for its emotional possibilities, yeah, rather than its attachment to trends.
Yeah, and experimentation. I mean, this is the thing for me. I mean, music is, as I was saying recently, I mean, music is about exploration and adventure and just pushing yourself. I mean, it's therapy. It's everything. You know, it's communication. It's expression. It's cathartic. It's all those different things. So, you know, it's very difficult to actually box yourself in when that's what you want to do. And so sometimes you'll create something. You know, you've got to have an awareness of what you're doing if you want to be accessible to people. If you want to put out an album that people are going to be interested in listening to, then you have to have an awareness of what's around you. You can't bury your head in the sand and just say, well, I'm going to make the kind of music I like, because no one's going to care, unless you just want to do it for cathartic reasons only. But I mean, you know, if you do want to express yourself to other people and share your ideas and feelings and thoughts, then you've got to have an awareness of things that are around you, listen to different forms of music. And I find that, you know, by DJing or playing out or traveling, you know, it gives you a sense of other things and other ways of looking at music that actually inform how you might approach what you do.
Because the other criticism of you, if I may bring this up,
go for it,
which
mate,
is fascinating. On that one hand, you're deemed, you know, the easy listening thing comes in, but the other thing that confuses the modern critic is the amount of music you make, which I think, you know, in the classical world, I mean, someone like, you know, Peter Maxwell Davis got accused, you know, people are suspicious because it's almost like they're used to the cycles of rock and pop, which was a commercial cycle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because if you're a musician, you're constantly moving one way or the other and making sounds.
Well, I mean, this year I've written the music for a Japanese film called Yugoto Yonume, which was for the London Symphony Orchestra. I've written the music for, I mean, you know, I performed the music for Throw of Dice, which is a music that I did for an Indian silent movie, and I'm doing the Human Planet series at the moment for the National Orchestra of Wales for the BBC. I've just done this piece for the Royal Opera House. I'm doing my next album. I've just worked on an advert for Yves Saint Laurent, which was a completely different thing altogether. I've just done a video game called Enslaved, which was with Andy Serkis and Alex Garland, and so I'm always doing music in different ways sometimes. And then again, I'll be producing different artists. I'm about to work with a girl called Hannah Peel, who's actually a great folk artist. And, you know, so I'm always working with different people. And like I said, Ellie Goulding, you know, was on. I mean, I won't go into all this, but it's just kind of, I'm just thinking about all the different things I did. It's very hard for me to say I do this.
And it's
just music.
Is it as natural as thinking in a way?
Yeah, because music's what, you know, I mean, it's like speaking. I've said many times I've spent far more time playing music and listening to music and creating music than I have speaking, a lot more time. So, you know, it's much more natural for me to work in lots of different ways than it is for me to talk about it.
Mm. And just to finish this, I'm wondering if you see positive signs about the fact that superficially in the media there seems to be more of this music that has been blocked in his world, and to some extent still is, but it seems to be, for whatever reason, there is a personally I feel the audience is deeply curious and I feel that they're being blocked off by the media and the business and the industry. But of course, as that disintegrates and collapses, and the internet enables us to find our own roots, it seems to be that the music is being found and loved, and therefore something slowly seems to be changing.
Yeah, I think things are slowly changing. I mean, you know, people. I think the internet is definitely good for that. You know, you can find anything you want in the internet. I mean, I was recently just literally learning how to perfect a flamenco form by just watching YouTube and finding countless examples of great guitarists playing that particular form. So, I mean, you know, you can actually, whatever you want to learn about, I mean, that's how I researched the Japanese film. I just listened to loads of Japanese music through the internet. And so you can get to anything you want, really. It's about you actually having the bravery to kind of, you know, approach that and come out of your comfort zone and think, okay, I wonder what that's like, and is there anything in that that would appeal to me? Because you have to realize you're delving into thousands of years of someone else's culture that has evolved a certain way, and you can't approach it with a kind of attitude of, oh, I can absorb this in 10 minutes and I'll, you know, I'll understand it and it will be obvious to me. It won't. And initially it is going to be hard work if you listen to music that has any depth from another culture. But then it's worth persevering if you actually want to get something, you know, if you want to get something out of it, and if you want to perhaps, you know, try and find a different way of thinking and approaching sound.
I think it's interesting the psychological thing about you mentioned about when you nominate for the Mercury and you were the one out of the 12 that was still racked in world. It is, I was thinking that this, you know, that idea that bizarre success it would be that can now kind of not happen because record shops are collapsing, where you were pulled out and you were just in S, you know, between whatever and whatever.
Well,
you know.
I talked about that at the time. I said, you know, can we never get to a point where you know, it's just about alphabetical order? And in fact, at the time, funny enough, I do remember saying it would be great, wouldn't it, if we could go into a record shop and there was just literally some kind of a console where you could just literally tap things in alphabetically and perhaps you could decide what kind of categorization you wanted things in. I had no idea iTunes was going to kind of like do that. But, you know, and there were other kind of other ways of categorizing or looking at stuff. But you know, that I suppose is what, you know, what we have now. We have a possibility of really exploring music as music and not really having all this crap imposed on us that comes from people's fear and prejudice and paranoia about music undermining their sense of self-worth and importance.
And what does it feel like if you are invited to play somewhere and you are effectively put on the world stage, or you're put in the world?
Well, to be honest, I mean, for a long time I was put on the Jazz and World stage at Glastonbury. I haven't done Glastonbury for a while, but, you know, that happened for many years, and it's happened in loads of other places. I'm actually doing WOM Adelaide next year, you know. So I kind of, that has happened to me a lot. But then, you know, at the same time, I mean, you know, I don't mind. I mean, because I can't really complain, because we can still fill the Royal Albert Hall, or we can still do a gig at Shepherd's Bush Empire, and that's sold out, and you know, so I can't complain, because we have a really good crack at it, you know, and people do still come to gigs. So as long as that's the case, then it's fine, as long as people come with an open mind and listen to the music and aren't bothered about categories, then that's cool.
Nitin Sawhney, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks a lot, mate.